Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. And Patty's looking at me, is he going to say good morning or good afternoon? It is afternoon.
Yes. So. Thank you.
Good. Uh-huh. Afternoon.
David's oriented to time, place, and person.
Uh-huh. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. And our guests today are Viv and Louise. Well,
hi.
Do I need to say more? Vivian Armstrong and Louise Young, for those of you who aren't as old as Laron is and aren't in the community. Viv and Louise are two lesbian activists who have been active in the community since the late 1800s, I believe.
Yes, indeed.
Some of the things that they've done...
You know, the wagon train was rough.
It probably was. Mm-hmm. So, but you made it.
But we got here as fast as we could.
You did. Some of the things they did, they were the first Texas couple to get civilly united in Vermont. Right. And then they got married in California. And how many times have you been married?
Actually, just once in California.
Oh, okay.
We thought about doing the state-by-state tour, mm-hmm. but...
You decided your marriage will stick?
HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, said that that might be overkill.
And besides,
somebody needs to do it.
We just had to sit around and wait for our 08 marriage to get, you know, finalized. So when the Supreme Court made it final, we didn't have any more worries.
Right. You were one of the couples that got married before Prop 8 in that 6-month window when marriage was legal in California.
Correct.
Yeah. Good.
See, now I was told, Louise, that, you know, I would, you know, I had no problems doing a ceremony getting married, but I just wanted to do it when it was legal.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you two been together?
43 years.
Wow.
So how has
congratulations.
Marriage, yeah, how has marriage changed your relationship?
Well, I don't actually.
It's been so long we've forgotten what it was like.
Well, but here's one. This year we filed a joint income tax return, a federal joint income tax return, mm-hmm. for the first time. We did file, when we lived in Vermont for 2 years, we filed state, mm-hmm. income tax, joint state income tax return.
Yeah.
How did that feel? Because I was able to do the same thing. And it was, I loved it. Because one, I'm always doing both of our taxes. So it was kind of a relief.
You only have to do one.
I just have to do one. But it was just kind of cool. I could put both of our information on. It's like it felt like we were finally being recognized.
It did. I will agree with that. It was really an amazing feeling because it was a federal institution, albeit the Internal Revenue Service, mm-hmm. that was recognizing our relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was a whole lot better than when we retired and having to deal with Social Security before any of the Supreme Court decision, because that was extremely frustrating.
And frustrating in what way?
Well, having to be denied. Oh. You know, you, mm-hmm. check off that you're married on the box when you end up applying for your benefits, mm-hmm. and then they give you a call and tell you that they're going to take it out of there and make you single again and put you in a little box that you got married, and maybe they'll deal with it later, mm-hmm. when it comes to benefits.
So
that was extremely insulting to the
So would
tears.
The two of you be making more money, or does it come out to be the same amount of money? If Social Security...
Well, in terms of Social Security, right now we're
alive, and so
we're alive, and we're getting our own Social Security. Mm-hmm. But right now, were one of us to die, Social Security does not recognize same-sex marriage yet.
So now, no survivor benefits.
Yeah, it's in that kind of in-between, mm-hmm. iffy stage that they haven't worked everything out like the Internal Revenue Service has, so that still we are single in, mm-hmm. the eyes of Social Security, but we're married in the eyes of the Internal Revenue Service.
You know what I think is interesting here, and so odd? It takes more work to worry about little things like, well, they're same sex, they're opposite sex, they were married here, they live here.
Right.
It's so much easier, and this is what Internal Revenue did. They said, marriage is marriage. Oh, you're married? You file as married. Period. End of story. No discussion. I don't care who these two people are or what sex they are. They're married.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And that was easy.
you're right, David, and the fact of the matter is when you fill out the form, say, for Social Security benefits, potential survivor benefits, they say you must tell the truth. So mm-hmm. with that in mind, we checked the block that said married.
Because you are.
Because we have.
You're more married than a lot of others.
And
with your civil union and your marriage.
Right. We have a marriage certificate.
Sure.
That's signed, sealed, and delivered. And
that's no different than a heterosexual marriage certificate.
No, everybody else who was in line that day got the same thing we did.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, that you have to represent yourself in a way that you are not. In order to comply. And we pointed it out, and even the agents that we talked to would say, well, I know it's, you know, this isn't...
I'm not going to perjure myself.
Right.
We're married.
Yeah, we're married. But and they were saying, well, I think it'll be worked out soon. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, they made some, that, I guess they have a little notes.
Yes. Yeah, there's a comment. There are comments box. So our marriage is in the comments box. So mm-hmm. that, you know, later on, though, they can see that we were honest at the time and mm-hmm. that, you know, our marriage was there. And, you know, if they want a copy of the document, they can have that, mm-hmm. too. But, you know, it's just a... It was really easy, it seemed like, for the Department of Defense, for Chuck Hagel to just go in there and say, the military, y'all are, you know... You're in line, you know, with all of the policies. It was easier for the IRS, I think, to just change a couple things on mm-hmm. their forms and do it. And,
right.
you know, like anything else, it's easier to get money than it is to give it away.
You know, and it's not even changing a couple of boxes. Well, I guess because it's not husband and wife, it's spouse and spouse that they
right.
have to change. Okay.
Right.
Okay. So they did have to change something.
But it's almost a don't ask, don't tell in terms of being honest.
It is.
You know, it's really, I agree, it's incredibly insulting mm-hmm. to say, no, well, you have to pretend that you're not married mm-hmm. for our purposes.
Right.
It's you know, it is insulting. It's demeaning.
It is demeaning, and we wouldn't do it. We were
Good.
Told that we had to do it. So.
Well, and the same thing was true with Medicare benefits.
Right.
I mean, I went round and round with them when Louise was still working, and we had domestic partner benefits, mm-hmm. and then, and I was trying to, you know, they were telling me that I had to pay another $100 or whatever the fee was that year for the Part B of mm-hmm. The outpatient benefits under Medicare because they did not recognize the insurance that came from the domestic partner benefits. So, in essence, we're paying for both.
Right.
And that's a penalty.
That's
right.
insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
You pay $1,200 more just because you have to.
Mm-hmm. That's
you know,
ridiculous.
Or you pay a penalty if you don't sign up.
Just before we went on the air,
wow.
you know, the number one argument
awful.
Against same-sex marriage is that same-sex marriages are going to ruin heterosexual marriage as it's existed since biblical times. Have you been keeping track of how many marriages you've actually ruined personally?
No. We've been to more weddings since, you know, my nieces and nephews have gotten older.
Hmm. And those are straight weddings mostly,
but,
huh?
But I will tell you this, David. I read the New York Times style section every weekend, every Sunday, and I haven't noticed that the wedding section has been getting remarkably smaller
mm-hmm.
since... same-sex marriage began to be recognized, as a matter of fact.
I was just wondering. Just wondering, because that's the number one argument. Two cases were heard by the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals this week. And the judge, who's a Republican who was nominated by Ronald Reagan, so it's a very conservative judge, wasn't taking the state's case at all. In fact, he was getting furious at the solicitors general from Indiana and Wisconsin. He was fabulous. There were a couple of things that he said. He called the anti-gay arguments silly nonsense. This is a conservative, a right-wing conservative, because what he was doing was he was looking at the law, looking at the arguments, and they were garbage. One of the arguments was had to do with adoption. And he said, well, since your state allows gay couples to adopt, aren't those kids better if their parents are married? Aren't there a whole series of benefits that flow from that? Yes, yes, yes. So what are you arguing for? And furious. Wisconsin one, when he was speaking, the yellow light went on, which means your time is up. So one of the other judges jumped in and said, you're not hiding behind that yellow light. Answer the question. So we know how the Seventh Court is going to come out.
Oh, yeah. So. Well, one of the, going back to what you, the question you posed to Louise and Vivian is, how many marriages have they ruined? And he asked the question, how is letting gay couples getting married going to stop heterosexual couples from getting married? And they couldn't answer. And yeah. His response was, huh, funny.
Well, when they were in their discussion of adoption, he said, well, why isn't Indiana then criminalizing, the word he used was fornication, meaning these heterosexuals who are having sex, producing kids that gay people have to raise? Why are you criminalizing that? Not just saying working against it, criminalizing it.
Well, because it's been banned and made illegal for us to marry. Mm-hmm. So it actually would be criminal for us, I suppose, in the eyes of many, including our own Attorney General, that we're somehow criminals if we attempt to marry in
right.
Here was another question that I liked that he asked. Why does Indiana allow sterile people to marry?
Perfect question. If that's their argument, their argument, number one argument is marriage is for procreation. Mm-hmm. Well, if you, you clearly cannot have a child biologically, why are you allowed to get married?
Well, our current Attorney General seems to have a similar opinion.
And his amicus brief is filled with
Procreation
is
the purpose, and the state has an interest in that. Uh-huh. And I was going, really?
Because we don't have enough people here.
I mean, either way.
We can't keep up with building schools. They open a brand new school, and there are more classrooms that are in portable classrooms than in the new building because the population is growing so fast. Yeah, we have a real interest in increasing the population more.
Right, right.
I'd like to just interject one thought, though. Vivian and I have been activists for more than 40 years, and I have not seen one issue that has changed so quickly as the public opinion on gay marriage. Mm-hmm. I've not seen any issue within our own community or related to GLBT rights that has turned around so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it still amazes me.
What do you attribute to that change?
I think
change.
I think it's better information, because a lot of people think that we already have protections from getting fired from our job, which we do not, mm-hmm. particularly in states like Texas. But I think that the marriage has been more common. People know that we can't get married.
I think it's probably information, but I also think that as more and more people come out to their friends, neighbors, and family, coworkers, that it makes all the difference in the world. But
I love my son, and you know what? I really love his partner, too.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And that has changed.
I know I'm supposed to hate them, because I was taught that, but I really love them.
Right, and I want my son, my daughter, to have all the rights of my other children.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I think it's been the fact that more and more people are coming out and it's not being a big deal.
Well, I think a lot of it, too, has to do with, I think, the immediate leaps and bounds that we saw, particularly in the Democratic Party, was a real leadership from the president, where he stepped up and supported us. And we saw the NAACP, we saw LULAC, we saw NALEO, several groups, labor. step up and join him in that. And I remember at the 2012 Democratic National Convention, the entire delegation, not just the LGBT delegates, but the entire delegation of the state of Minnesota wore No on Two shirts one evening. And it just felt, you could feel it in the Democratic Party. And you could feel it in Houston when we had the convention, and it was in the platform in support of marriage equality with no opposition whatsoever. I mean, I really felt it. And so I think, you know, states and families have moved it forward. But golly, having that leadership at the top, I think that must make a difference.
That was Minnesota, but at the Democratic Convention, the state Democratic Convention here in Dallas this summer, this caucus met in this little room, this caucus in that little room. But the Stonewall caucus, in order to accommodate it, took the main convention floor, and every candidate was there, and every delegate was there. It was not just gay people. Everybody wanted to go to the Stonewall caucus. That was fascinating.
I think another thing I think played a big role in it is, politically, is just getting the discussion out there for people to even talk about it. And I think Gavin Newsom played a huge role in that, and by, you know, his civil activism, what he did in San Francisco. And just, I mean, that made national news, and it stayed in the news for a while, and it really got the dialogue going, and it hasn't, obviously, it hasn't gone away since.
Well, I think another big factor was the demise of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military.
Yep.
That when you change the culture in the U.S. military and it goes rather smoothly, then that's a population that, I mean, that's a big breakthrough.
Mm-hmm.
That is more of a typical macho population.
When you have generals who can say, well, I'm a lesbian, when the president appoints the undersecretary of the army, it's somebody that you worked with at Raytheon, Louise,
yes.
Amanda Simpson, who, when I interviewed her, you know, talking about transgender issues, she was, you know, really loving about it. When she was talking about rocket systems and other things,
absolutely.
It's like so over my head. It's like, I know why he appointed her. God, is she qualified. But but what a great role model that she can be out and be in that position.
Absolutely. I mean, Amanda is truly a rocket mm-hmm. scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, the fact that we were given our rights and the sky didn't fall. I think, you know, as that happens more and more, then it changes people's minds, if not hearts.
So when Massachusetts, which is a small state, legalized same-sex marriage, and everybody predicted, well, that's the end of marriage in Massachusetts. And then a funny thing happened. Massachusetts's divorce rate became the lowest divorce rate in the country. Number two was Vermont with their civil unions.
Vermont was the first state to come behind that after the civil mm-hmm. unions and have a public vote on marriage that was successful.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows you that the work that they did in those, it's a smaller state, but the work that they did ended up really where people had those small town dialogues. And if you talk to people enough and they understand the issues, then they're supportive and they would go to the polls and vote for it.
So during those 10 years, people who had never thought about the issue, I think a lot of the move has been among people who just never thought of the issue.
Right.
So people looked at Massachusetts, Vermont, now California, then, you know, Iowa. Oh, well, nothing particularly happened. So.
Well, and I think it's kind of interesting, too. We normally see the progression as, you know, hate crime law legislation and then, you know, accommodations and employment, and then we see relationship recognition. But this has really turned itself on its head. I mean, our whole movement, because we now have more marriage equality states than we have states with protections mm-hmm. in the workplace.
Right.
Which is kind of crazy.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guests are Louise Young and Viv Armstrong. We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Jake Winters from Leicester, England, and I listen to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Lauren Landis, and our guests are Viv and Louise. We're just talking newsy stuff. You had a story.
Well, this is a story I think everybody has seen. If you haven't, you got to go find it. There's a teenager, 19-year-old young man from Georgia, who came out to his very Christian family, and the response was not nice, to put it mildly. But he was smart enough to record it.
What he said, I saw an extended interview with him, and he said he knew right away, this isn't going to go very well.
And
I better record this.
And it didn't. It turned into a big verbal attack. Then it turned into a physical attack. So
by his own family members.
So this was proof. This is, visual proof that we in the community already know happens every day. But I think this has taken a lot of some of our allies or just people who just don't think about the issue, taking them by surprise. So they kicked this young man out, and thankfully our community has responded, and he has raised a lot of money to help take care of him,
So far, he did a GoFundMe.
Yes.
He's raised
$90,000.
Now, he's saying that he's going to donate some of this money back, which is great. I mean, good, loving kid. It shows what kind of how he learned the good things from his family and filtered out the bad. But he needs to take that money and use it for a college education.
He really should.
And,
mm-hmm.
And you can make your donation once you graduate.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
People want you to succeed. That's why they're giving you this money, so that you're not homeless like so many kids
are. Right, or that you don't get an education because your family won't help you.
Right.
Watching the video is so emotional to watch, because on one hand, I was really proud of the young guy because he was standing up for himself. Mm-hmm. But that was also a big reminder of what it's like to be young and gay. You are out there alone with nobody having your back. In school, most of the time in your families. I mean, he was totally by himself. And the situation actually could have been a lot worse. But that was just
If
he wasn't so strong.
He was a great kid.
He was really defending himself verbally and physically the best that he could, the best that he knew how. So I think it's really important, if you know a young gay individual, take them, just support them, because they are, most of the times, are at the mercy of themselves.
Well, and this family too, I couldn't believe that their stepmother and such were pommeling this kid.
Yes, yes.
And I do admire him for standing up for himself. But I thought the stuff that they were saying was so typical of the South. What will the neighbors think? Mm-hmm. I mean, that was really kind of the theme of why they wanted him to change.
Yeah, I don't think.
Well, the religious aspect of arguing that, and at the same time beating your child and, like you say, kicking them out.
What religion teaches that?
Religious,
And fleeing the F word and the S word
word,
all
constantly.
Kinds of them.
Oh,
yeah.
Constantly. I mean, in one sentence, it was like, I love you, and the very next sentence is, but you gotta go. Really? That's love?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm speaking God's word
you. Yes. Yeah.
And one female member of the family said, I've known you were gay since you were a little bitty boy. And I think she did say little bitty. And he said, well, it's not a choice. And she said, of course it's a choice.
Yes.
Yet she knew.
Yes, she knew.
Time
so what?
He was a little bitty boy. Well,
so what 3 or 4-year-old chooses to be gay?
Or straight.
Or straight.
What 3 or 4-year-old even knows what that
you've
is?
You've known this ever since he was a toddler, but yet he chose it.
It just shows.
So we were talking a little bit before the show about who do we think actually sent all this money? That's a lot of money. This $90,000, that's probably tens of thousands of donations from different people. You said, as you were introducing it, people from our community rallied around him. I don't think it was our community so much. I think our community heard this and said, another one. How many times have I heard this story? I'm glad that kid was smart enough to record it so that people can see that. I think these were a lot of straight people who saw this and said, well, that's horrible. Is that really what some gay people have to go through? Oh, my God, I need to send him $10 it's, you know, not a whole lot of money, but maybe it'll help a little bit. I think it was a whole lot of people who...
And maybe it's a bunch of Rob Portmans. I call it the Rob Portman theory of relative morality, because, you know, he was anti-gay, anti-gay, anti-gay.
Until Rob Portman was.
As a senator, United States senator, and he was purely anti-gay and pretty vocal about it, and certainly supported all of those right-winger, conservative fright-wingers, I call them, you know, and with his money and votes, until his son came out to him, mm-hmm. and suddenly it's a different tune. It's my son. I'm going to love him. I'm going to support his marriage.
At least he's supporting him and not hiding behind his religion.
But I think it might be a lot of Rob Portman's sending money in and saying, I've got to atone for what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
This is one way I can do it.
That's what I think. I think people from our community, I'm sure, stepped up. I have no question about that. But I think it's a lot of other people who had never quite seen it this horribly disgusting as this family was.
And I think one of the biggest slaps in the face about all of this whole story is that they called and left him his family called him and left a voicemail that said, please remove the video.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I'm sorry.
Right.
Not, I love you.
Right.
Just take down that video.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an extra slap in the face and a slap with their ignorance.
Well, it's that same mentality of people who will sign these things to get something on the ballot, but then when it comes out, that's public knowledge. They don't want their name. They want to shield it.
A petition.
Yeah, petition. They want to shield it. Well, if you're so proud about what you did with your son, why would you want it taken down?
Yeah.
Petitions are public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're going to sign a petition.
Exactly.
It's public record.
Well, and now
that's what a petition is. That's part of the definition of that. I want to talk a little bit about John Wiley Price, who we haven't addressed. I did a story this week. I didn't call Iran, but I talked to you, Patty. I talked to Viv. I talked to Louise.
Though I do see John Wiley on a regular.
So I need you to. So let's hear your opinion, since
no, I don't have one.
Because you work with. The premise of my story was whether or not he's guilty of whatever he's charged with. The evidence has not been released. We don't know what it is. The federal government doesn't file these kinds of things lightly, and we know that. But the gay community better not be gloating about this, because if something happens to him, we've lost somebody who has been an ally over the years. Louise, you've known him for... Since he began his career.
I have probably known John Wiley, County Commissioner John Wiley Price, since 1978. And he was one of the first in the African-American community of the Democratic Party to support us. He was one of the first. And he really never flinched from that support. And back then, in the late 70s, it was not popular for anybody to support our community. Another supporter, longtime supporter, was former Justice of the Peace Charles Rose. But there were others, but he was always very supportive. I remember he used a picture that his campaign took of several of us in the gay community holding John Wiley Price yard signs. This was when he was running for constable in 1980, and we were out in front of his house, and we had John Wiley Price yard signs, and he used the brochure.
Now, one thing that I think most people don't realize is we only have a Democratic county court, like, for the last 2 years. Before that, for 4 years now, it's been 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's 4-1. But before that, it was 1-4.
Yes.
One Democrat, 4 Republicans. There was going to be no AIDS funding, none, in Dallas County, county AIDS funding. And some of that money is filtered down from the federal government. But there would have been none had he not been the one to direct the money to the AIDS agencies here.
And he did so, in my view, unwaveringly, in most cases.
And particularly before the numbers in the African American community started to rise. I mean, he was there, you know, when it was still considered to be a gay, white man.
I'm talking about funding this in the early 90s.
Saying,
yes.
Yeah, I mean, he was for us. I mean, it wasn't...
He saw a health crisis. Mm-hmm. He saw a need.
A human thing.
And he took care of it. You know, am I saying with all this, and I'm sure lots of people listening are just going, oh, I can't wait until he's out of office. I hope people in the gay community and the LGBT community are not gloating over this. Because, you know, yes, somebody else will come along who will fill his shoes, I think, at this point. I think we're far enough along.
You know, you mentioned it in the article, but I remember when I first came to Dallas in 1989, and he was whitewashing billboards in South Dallas. Mm-hmm. The billboards were liquor and cigarettes. And, you know, he said, why are they targeting our community? Why are they all over it? Why they don't have this in North Dallas? They don't have this in other areas, but they're targeting the African-American community in South Dallas. And he said, this has got to stop. And people said, oh, it's not a big deal. It's just billboards. And his point, and I take it fully, is that these corporations wouldn't be spending billions of dollars nationwide on advertising on billboards if they didn't work. And so, you know, that was his point. And I was like, wow, this is somebody to watch.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, and he's always been a controversial figure, but I think what we're just reminding listeners is he has supported us, and we just need to remember that. Mm-hmm. and let the investigation proceed. But here's a man who supported us, mm-hmm, when few did.
Right.
Definitely.
And that was the whole point of my article. Just, I hope there's not a whole lot of gloating and oh good, we're rid of him.
And he's innocent until proven guilty.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Governor Perry is too.
Yes.
And we don't have all the evidence in that case either, because it was not all released. He is not being charged. Perry is not being charged with just trying to get a lesbian district attorney out of office.
He's also not being charged with bribery, which is what he said in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was what he said he was being charged with.
Yeah, so. He was mistaken.
Projection, maybe?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know. Poor thing. He doesn't know.
Yeah, that's pretty
bad.
Yeah,
oops, he couldn't remember the third charge.
When you don't even know what you've been charged with.
Okay, so Laurent and I are sitting here talking about Michael Sam. Viv and Louise walk in, and they're like, you know, you have to ask a lesbian. So, lesbian?
Right. Well, as a longtime pro football fan, I remember watching games back in the 50s when I was a little girl with my parents, and so I've always been a pro football fan. I was delighted when Michael Sam was drafted. I was surprised that he went so far down a seventh-round choice, because I felt like he was a better player than that. Of course, Michael Sam, for those listening who don't know, is the first openly gay player to be drafted into the NFL, having come out when he was a senior at the University of Missouri. And he was co-defensive player of the year in the Southeast Conference.
Which is not trivial.
That's not trivial. That's huge.
A defensive player, the defensive player of the year in the Southwest Conference has never been drafted that far down.
Southeastern Conference.
Has not been drafted that far down, at least for the last 10 years or something like that.
Right. And at any rate, for those who don't know, he was cut in the final cut of the St. Louis Rams. The teams have to cut their squad down to 53 players from, gosh, I think it may have been 90 or something like
originally,
that.
Originally, yeah.
When the season practices started. But at any rate, he was on that last cut, and it looked like that he was kind of teetering on the edge of making it. I believe the Rams gave him a fair chance. I think the reason that he was cut is the Rams had too many defensive ends, defensive backs, mm-hmm. and he was a defensive back competing with some of the best defensive backs in pro football.
Mm-hmm.
And I sure hope that someone else, some other team, picks him up. We will know today whether another team will pick him up off waivers, is the term. He also has an opportunity to play on the practice squad Correct. For the Rams if they offer him that.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
there are...
That's kind of a backup squad.
Exactly.
It's the people that the main team practices against.
Like sparring partners.
Right. And the difference is a whole lot of money.
even though $6,000 a week is nothing to sneeze at for us.
Right. It's not. And apparently that's what the backup squad makes.
He could probably live on that for a while.
Yeah, that's the minimum that NFL can pay you.
Right, for 17 weeks.
But
right.
if somebody or a couple somebody's on the Rams would get injured and he was on the practice field,
they could elevate
exactly.
him. Kind of like the baseball players bring him up from the farm teams.
Mm-hmm. So,
it's like a football understudy.
So I certainly hope that he is either picked up for the 53-member squad of another team, because Lord knows there are teams in the NFL who need defensive mm-hmm. backs.
There's one right here in Dallas.
One in Dallas.
But there are also teams that just need to sell tickets. Dallas Cowboys sells out. Other teams don't necessarily. And the Rams, when they picked him up, developed fans across the country.
His jersey sold out, I think, the number two jersey
this summer. But the Rams have developed fans across the country. Whoever picks him up will automatically develop a new fan base.
Well, I downloaded the Rams football app, and I had never been a Rams fan.
I have followed football since I was a kid, also college, professional football, just like Louise, but I've never followed the St. Louis Rams, which actually used to be the L.A. Rams. But anyway.
Right. That's right. They did.
Yeah. That's what I remember as a kid.
Those of us remember,
yeah. Because of Michael Sam, I became a fan of them.
Sure.
That's right.
Sure.
And I think, we do need to mention him being cut is nothing new. A lot of players get cut.
Sure.
They do.
Well, and to his credit, the St. Louis Rams coach said he was drafted based on football.
Exactly.
And he was released based on football.
But the problem is his chances of being picked up from another team are somewhat diminished because of the mentality of, like, the former coach of the Indianapolis Colts, who made a comment just last month that he had no doubt about Michael Sam's ability to play, but he wouldn't have drafted him. He wouldn't have taken him on his team because of the attention, unwanted attention.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, Laurent Landis. Our guests are Viv and Louise. We don't need to say anything else.
This is Janice McCall from TCU, and I listen to the Lambda Week on 89.3 KNON FM, Dallas.
This is Lambda Weekly, and I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Thelma and Louise, and the late Patty.
Fine comparison.
I love that.
We were talking about Michael Sam, but
Michael Sam.
Louise, there was a story that was really a terrible story. Most of the summer, the coverage of Michael Sam treated him kind of as a curiosity, and
once the initial press died down about the kiss, then right. it was kind of quiet.
Well, right. And until ESPN, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, did this ridiculous, horrible story about Michael Sam's showering habits, and apparently the point they were making is he, I guess, waited till, you know, toward the end of shower time to shower. And David pointed out he was undoubtedly out there working on the field doing a little extra.
And that's what he said. He was out on the field longer than the other members of the team because he was working that hard to get picked up.
And the coach of the Rams, Jeff Fisher, really raked ESPN mm-hmm. over the...
Maybe it was him who said it. I think it was actually the coach who said it, not Michael Sam.
He could be in the weight room. He could have been out on the field practicing, but it wasn't because, you know, he was trying to avoid showering with
right.
the other team.
Right. That's what the whole stupid story, I should say, was even about. Because that's such a concern, supposedly, for a lot of other athletes, is the shower issue.
But it's okay for them to have women reporters
in the
shower room.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
I don't get that.
Years.
Exactly.
Sure.
Well, but that's the thing. It's
or
okay.
Or they don't have anyone in there.
It's okay if a female is oogling over them. But whatever. So the story was that Michael Sam avoided this by avoiding taking showers with the rest of the teammates, so he went in last. Well, to report the showering habits of any player is just ridiculous. We don't need to know that.
Nobody's interested in that.
Well,
obviously,
a lot of people became interested when ESPN aired the stupid story, and they got well-deserved blowback from mm-hmm. everybody, including the Rams head coach Jeff Fisher, and they had to issue an apology.
They did.
Good.
And
a retraction.
Yeah, a retraction and apology, and hopefully I hope they regret it.
You know, one good thing about Michael Sam is we've been through this now.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so last week we ran out of time and we were going to talk about, this is our sports segment, we were going to talk about Donald Sterling.
Okay, Donald Sterling, the NBA, well, former NBA owner who blew up in the news this summer because of his, like, outlandish racist comments, who was exposed through his mistress. Well, his mistress now is claiming, I'm sorry, this is hard to tell without laughing, but she is claiming that he is gay and that she has never had sex with him and that she was his beard.
Wow.
That's the story.
Well, that's
now.
A quote, too.
Yes, exactly.
Is that before or after he had Alzheimer's?
I don't know.
Okay, but here...
But David, yeah. David brought up a legit question, which was...
What did he need a beard for if he was married?
And
his wife his beard?
But I say first of all, if it's true that he is in fact gay, that's how idiotic he is. He and his wife have been separated for some time. So I'm thinking, in his logic, I still need a woman on my arm to keep up the appearances.
Because everyone's so interested in Donald Sterling's
exactly.
sex life.
Exactly.
And his
exactly.
romantic life. And all,
exactly.
And his life at all.
Exactly. Again, if it's true.
I mean, it's more like, who ever heard of this guy until right. he started making these stupid comments?
Yeah.
Right.
Just.
Well, his so stupid comment premise was that, I don't want other people to see you with black players.
Right.
I don't want other people
Though
to see you with any.
99% of his team is black.
Right. Yeah.
But he didn't want her to be seen.
He didn't want her to be seen with them.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop taking yeah. pictures of yourself yeah. with these players.
Yeah.
Because,
but I have to say, if he is in fact gay, I'm not surprised when I saw the interview.
I don't want to claim him.
I don't want to claim him either. Exactly. I don't want to claim him either. But he did look like some crazy old queen when I saw him in an interview.
Right. And, you know, it's this interesting phenomena that I think every community has when there is some idiotic thing done on the news or some tragic thing done on the news, you know, a mass shooting, you know, Vivian and I always say, oh, I hope the person wasn't gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Black
friends say we hope they weren't black.
Yeah,
oh,
and,
trust me.
And
we do.
And with Donald Sterling, the Jewish community was saying, yes, he was Jewish, but the person who banned him from basketball was also Jewish.
Oh, was it? Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, the commissioner.
Yeah, I didn't know the commissioner was Jewish. Okay.
It's like our communities wanting to
right.
sweep
yeah,
these
right.
people away
right.
from us.
Yeah.
Well, it's
totally
embarrassing
it.
When
it is
somebody
embarrassing.
Does that. I think anybody who doesn't do that, it's because they don't think of themselves really as part of a community at all.
Right.
You know, we should take pride in what people in our communities do, and you know, and I do. Even you, Laron.
Absolutely.
But I do think it's interesting, though, that his rationale, the way it all got started, was his whole, what will other people think?
Right.
I mean, it's just so bizarre to me.
And he's been out there in the public eye, you know, at least locally, for all those years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean...
Well, he's won awards from the NAACP. He was about to win another one.
Yeah.
And what will people think? Well, what are people going to think about what you just said?
and we haven't seen the last of him. He was forced to relinquish his team. I think his wife, well, yeah, his wife owns it now.
No, it's been sold.
Oh, that's right. It has been sold. It has been sold.
Microsoft,
Steve Ballmer.
But he is suing the NBA. He's fighting this.
Yeah.
So, we hadn't seen the last of it.
There was a study, and I saw this in a really bad right-wing newspaper, online newspaper. Here's the headline. Lesbians tend to be obese. Gay men tend to be toned. The feds have paid close to $3 million trying to figure out why. One of the comments in the story in the third paragraph is, a handful of research papers delivering some small insights into homosexual health, as if... What do we care about those people? I mean, that's really what that sentence is saying. They're saying, they're giving reasons, and I don't agree with their reasons. Gay and lesbian kids were up to 76% less likely than straight youth to play sports on a team. First of all, I disagree with that.
Lesbians and the gays are together all of a sudden.
In sports.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think...
They disavowed that stereotype right there.
But
lesbian softball players.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that might be true for boys.
It probably is for boys.
It's so that they couldn't.
But that's not what this says.
Did it say less likely?
It says gay and lesbian kids were up to 76% less likely than straight youth to play on a sports team. I disagree. I think lesbian youth are twice as likely to play on a sports team.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that I agree with you.
Okay, so then they said...
Well, it's kind of a stereotype, too.
It is. Most of this is.
It is. Okay, so gay men tend to think they're fat when they're not, while lesbians have the opposite problem, meaning lesbians think they're thin when they're not. So let's talk to the fattest person in the room, Louise.
Right. I'm definitely, if people could see me, on the thin side. Right. First of all... Why was this money spent?
I get it. They were looking for, they're looking for cures to health problems. If they found that a certain segment of the population tends to be more obese, what are the reasons for it and what can we do about it?
But they have. Everybody in the South. I mean,
I know.
Every article about obesity mentions that the highest percentage
is in the South.
I mean, fried food, people.
Well, it's also hot, so it leads to a lot less outdoor activity.
Right. Exertion.
Okay, here's the strangest sentence in this article. Compared with exclusively heterosexual males, heterosexual males with prior same-sex partners and bisexual males were more likely to self-perceive as overweight despite being a healthy weight or underweight.
I'm sorry, I'm confused. Go to the first part.
Heterosexual males...
You said exclusively heterosexual, and then you said they had same-sex partners.
No, compared to exclusively heterosexual.
Okay.
Heterosexual males with prior same-sex partners, where do you find that group?
Well,
I want to have some of them on.
The ex-gay camp.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
I don't know why.
I didn't know it was that many that you could actually find to interview.
That's my point.
But I will say that perhaps organized sports tend to be a place where some LGBT people, young people, would end up feeling uncomfortable because they feel different, and sometimes they're maybe not self-aware, but they're not comfortable.
Sure.
I think that's the ex-gay movement has made some men feel like they're too fat. You know? I mean, that's what that tells me.
Now, this is it doesn't say this in here. Here's what I'm thinking. That women tend to not be as critical of other women's weight.
Right.
And appearance.
In relationships.
In relationships, but even in general. Whereas men, especially heterosexual men, are going to be very critical of women's weights, and so a woman to stay in a relationship keeps her weight down because she has to be perky and beautiful and
in her heterosexual relationship.
In her heterosexual relationship.
For a newer model.
Or she'll be traded in, right?
Absolutely.
Right. No, absolutely. That's
yeah. You don't lose that baby weight, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas heterosexual men, they're saying, are not as toned.
It's true though.
Yeah, LaRon never lost his baby weight.
I did. I still got a husband. I'm surprised.
So, whereas heterosexual men, once they're in a relationship, are not as worried about what other people think about them. They're married. Whereas
they
gay men,
let themselves go.
They do.
Whereas gay men in a relationship or not in a relationship want to look good for the other gay guys. I think it's real simple, but it's not what the study found.
Right.
And I don't agree with the study.
I don't think it's a study. I think it's air quotes around the word study.
I know.
Maybe.
I think another thing that's at play here that they don't even touch upon in that article is what everybody wants to look good, but what people think looks good is different.
Mm-hmm. This is back to who's hot and who's
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Which we've been doing for years.
Which we've been doing for years.
We haven't done any
where
of those.
These buttons. Guys think that we all thought, as lesbians, thought that Britney Spears was hot. And we're like, no.
Exactly.
That's what you think.
Exactly.
Think
and years
hot.
Ago, LaRon and I went to a concert, a Melissa Etheridge concert, with Patty and Aaron, and we were the only two guys in the audience. And everybody is just screaming and throwing their underwear at her, and they were just going crazy. And LaRon and I are sitting
it's lesbian
back
with, high holy days.
You know, we were really enjoying this concert.
I loved it.
We loved this concert. But we're kind of sitting back going, oh, this is what's hot to lesbians. Oh, and I mean, to us, it was like we were on an anthropological expedition.
Because, yeah, you know, the study, what lesbians think is good looking as far as what a woman should look like is hot. In body image is totally different than what a heterosexual woman would think is hot and what a woman should look
like. Well, then go to some place like up in the Northeast. When Louise and I lived up there in Vermont and we would go shopping, we thought all the women were lesbians because they didn't wear makeup, they didn't do their hair any particular way, and they were wearing
the state
plaid,
shirt.
They were plaid flannel shirts.
Right,
and
that's
jeans
the state
and,
shirt in Vermont.
And it's like, you know, we couldn't tell them until the little kids kept coming up and saying, Mommy, Mommy, and then Daddy came along, and we go, oh, not.
You know, I've been to Vermont, I concur.
But you know, Aaron has a theory about this. Aaron has a theory about this is that she goes, they're not lesbians, they're just rural.
That's right. That's right.
Yep. So, and another thing we picked up from that was that we were naming off people who we thought were hot as lesbians, who we thought were hot. And I loved it. And Aaron was talking about, you know, attitudes, mostly attitude. Mm-hmm. But I loved the straight man who was driving through town who called in and said, Sigourney Weaver. You haven't mentioned Sigourney Weaver. We're like, yes, Sigourney Weaver.
Yes.
You know, because it's everybody's perceptions are
Jamie
different.
Jamie Lee exactly. Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis. I did have a crush on her when I was a kid.
See?
Yeah.
See.
Yeah.
See.
So okay. We should do another show like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We will. Start collecting those. One other little news item. Neil Abercrombie, who's the governor of Hawaii, who was a champion for marriage equality, he's like one of only two or three governors. The governor of Illinois pushed the legislation through. The governor of New York pushed their legislation through. That's been rare. But Neil Abercrombie was one of those people who took over from a governor who was completely against. He pushed it through, and he just lost his primary this week by a 2-1 margin. Now, there was a big crossover vote because they're allowed. You can vote in any primary. The Republican candidate for governor had an interesting comment. He said, I'm glad he credits Hawaii with having that many Republicans that we can make a difference. But here's what Neil Abercrombie said. They asked him if he would do anything different if he knew that this is how it would turn out. He said, where is my quote? There's no way I could live with myself if I thought I was diminishing another human being's ability to reach their full capacity.
Wow.
He said, absolutely, he would do nothing different at
That's
all.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hats off to him. Yeah,
that's somebody whose decision and heart was in the right place.
Mm-hmm. Good ethics in politics for once.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thelma Louise, I want to thank you for being here with us.
Cheers to you and to all of y'all that are watching.
Come back and see us again.
Oh, yeah. We love to come back.
We love having you.
And by the way, before we leave, we're going to make our pledge with a $50 check to KNON.
Thank you both.
You're
so
wonderful.
Much.
Thank you so much. We always appreciate you.
Thank you.
Anybody else who would like to just go to the KNON.org and click on the pledge button. Next week, our guest is Blair High. She runs the GEAR program, the transgender program over at Resource Center. She's doing some amazing creative things there that nobody else in the country is doing. For all of us here at Lambda Weekly, we'll see you next week.